shoots, scores! DK wins it for an end round!
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, back again to talk some more off-season moves, some questions from the listeners, and much, much more. Here to do that with me is Adam. Adam, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, we're doing good. Happy to be back on the pod, and let's talk some Orlando City.
Definitely. And Chase. Chase, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, bro. I've made very, very scattered appearances, I feel like, in the last like 6 months or so, but I'm always glad to be on.
That's okay, because in the past 6 months, there haven't been a ton of pods for you to be on in general.
Yeah.
Just because I've been busy, y'all been busy. It's just a busy world out there that we all live in. But that's okay. No worries at all. We will obviously be picking up the content once the season comes back, especially with the amount of games that are going to be played and the amount of games that we're going to have to cover as a podcast. So keep your ears peeled out for that, listeners. Let's go ahead and get straight into it. Adam, I'll go ahead and start with you. So Daniel and I, a couple weeks ago, covered a lot of the signings up to before the new year. And so just as a summarizer, that's Lucas Petrosso, that is Felipe Martins, Pereira getting a TAM contract, Grinwis getting a contract, Smith getting a contract, Loyola getting signed. What are your high-level thoughts on those moves that were made thus far?
I think they're all solid moves. There's nothing – obviously the best move is re-signing Mauricio Pereira to a TAM deal. Just that's great business getting our captain back. Someone who, in my opinion, has proven to be the best captain in Orlando City history at doing the captain job. Forget how good guys like Nani and Kaká were, just like a pure leader of your locker room is important to have, and getting him back and opening up a DP slot is both a safe move, a pragmatic move, and bringing a guy like that back, but an aggressive move and freeing up cap space in order to go out and get a guy who we will talk about later on this pod. So that was a really good move. The rest is, you know, solid, you know, keeping useful guys on the roster. You know, especially a guy like Kyle Smith that can play multiple spots. He's cheap. He's been here for a while. He knows the coach, he knows the system. All in all, solid moves, solid extensions. And Fabian Loyola, highly touted youngster. We'll see if he ends up making an impact on the field, but it's good to see us theoretically giving guys like that a chance.
Yep. Chase, any extra thoughts from you on those additions or re-signings?
No, I mean, yeah, it definitely was great to have Mauricio down into a DP, as he kind of also maybe moves into not, you know, he's still going to play a big part, but he's maybe not as much of a starring player as, you know, he has been previously. Obviously not to say that he's not going to play a big part, but it's going to be good to kind of work that money around. And then, you know, like Adam said, bring a new person in. All in all, I'm just happy to have more young, talented players come through, because, you know, I think that we've gotten good contributions from academy players recently. And I think one of them is bound to eventually become someone who we can either, you know, make some money off of or get some really good performances out of, especially now coming into a season where we're going to be competing on multiple competitive fronts. We're going to need some young guys to play key roles as well. I'm hoping Fabian and some of the other guys who are, you know, have had a year to develop can do that.
Definitely. All right. So let's stick with the signings. And Chase, I'm going to stick with you on this one. We got a little teaser around, I think it was the new year. It was either Christmas or the new year. I can't remember at this point, of Orlando City potentially re-signing Pedro Galese. And then a few days after that, we got confirmation and the communication that we had re-signed Pedro Galese to a new contract. Obviously not a DP, which some people feared is how much we'd have to pay. Instead, it sounds like it's going to be a TAM contract, and he's going to be one of the higher paid goalkeepers in the league. 2-year contract with a 1-year option. So a 2+1. Thoughts on re-signing El Pulpo?
I think a DP deal obviously would have been probably a little bit too much. You know, the way MLS roster rules work, I don't know if really there are many goalkeepers that would come to the MLS that would be worth a DP deal. That's not to undersell, though, how important Pedro Galese is to us. I think the consensus on him, he is a top 5 goalkeeper in the league. Even though it's always been weird with Pedro, like numbers kind of almost don't suggest that, but I, you know, numbers don't always tell the full story of a player. He has the ability, he has this sort of like clutch factor about him and these ability to make goal saving saves that really not many other keepers in the MLS would make. And I think Tam is honestly perfectly fine for him. He's a player who seems to step up when we absolutely need him most. And he's not as error prone as when he first came here. I thought that he had a bit of an error in him. But I think that that's kind of been ironed out, I guess, a little bit as he's become such a seasoned pro that he is now. And I think that the length of the contract for his age is good. You know, 2 years, keeping that option year as well. Because, you know, he doesn't seem like he's declining right now, but you never know when these players are, and you don't want to kind of be tied into a long-term contract for an aging player who can't contribute at the level that you would want for a hand player. But for the foreseeable future, I'm very happy and very excited to have him back in net. And I feel incredibly confident with him. And that's something that I would think a lot of teams in MLS can't quite say about their goalkeeper. And it's nice for us to feel that as well. He understands, you know, the club, and he's obviously very passionate, and he's been around working with Oscar and all the guys for a while, and I'm really excited to have him back.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited too. I like that you called out that he's no longer error prone. I think last year there was only one time where I remembered like one goal where I was like, "Ooh, he could have done better there." Like one or two goals maybe, but like other than that, he's done amazing. Yeah, maybe the numbers don't show it, but I think, like, the fact that we're all sitting here saying he saves so many goals for us, like, that other keepers wouldn't be able to save, that's a testament to maybe how bad our defense is if the numbers don't shoot off the screen, that we're still leaking that many goals, and we would have leaked a lot more if it wasn't for him. So it's good to have him back. I will be honest, before he was re-signed, I could have gone either way on it. I was fine with him coming back, but I do think there are some cons to there's pros and cons to everything, but I do think there are some cons to bringing him back. We do miss him when he goes to international breaks, right? Where we have to play 3 international breaks and he's off with Peru and we're playing our backup keeper for 3 games. And so, like, is that the best strategy to have, you know, 6 or 7 games out of the year where your starting goalkeeper isn't in net? In MLS, maybe, because you can get through a rough patch of 7 games and still make playoffs, but definitely a con there. Still an international slot, I'm pretty sure. I don't think he has his green card yet. So is goalkeeper the best spot to have an international when you could get a fairly decent goalkeeper for non-green card or for non-international slot? There are some cons there, but overall, I think he's a net positive. He is just such a good goalkeeper and really the leader of our back line. So I'm fine with it. Like I said, could have gone either way. Adam, what are your thoughts on all that mumble jumbo I just spewed and Galese re-signing for a 2+1 contract?
Yeah, I mean, basically, y'all summed it up. He's a good goalkeeper. It costs a lot, but he's worth it. And I think it's an aggressive move in terms of team building, because we could have gone cheap, could have gone domestic, and probably been fine, to be completely honest. Like, let's say Mason Sadahar has to start for us for the season. Like, that's not the end of the world. And we probably would have been fine. But Mason's not stealing us games. At least not the Mason that we've seen. We don't know if he's leveled up over the offseason, but Mason we've seen is not stealing us games like Galese does. And really what you're trying to do here is you think, okay, we've had a playoff team for 3 years straight now. it's time to step up to the next level. If we're really going to do this, we need a keeper that's going to win those us those extra games. And if we're going to compete with teams like Philadelphia, we're going to need every game we can get because that playoff seeding gets so tight at the top. So I think that is an aggressive move, and I like the mentality behind re-signing.
Yeah. If we wanted to, like, do someone else, my recommendation would have been the same as, I guess, last year's recommendation, which would have been Alec Kahn, who went to Cincinnati, and he was like the hottest goalkeeper on the market. Cincinnati got him from Atlanta for a free agent. And like 10 games into the season, he lost his starting spot to Roman Celentano, who's now Cincinnati's starting goalkeeper. And Alec Kahn is, again, a backup, where he was leaving Atlanta to not be a backup. So he's, again, going to be a hot goalkeeper on the market. So if we didn't re-sign Galese, I was kind of keeping an eye on that situation. Okay, Adam, let's go ahead and move on into the draft. We had four selections. Three came in the first round. We traded up to second, and that meant we lost Juan. And in second, we got Shakur Muhammad from Duke, a highly rated attacking midfielder slash winger forward, basically. Not a striker, but winger, a winger midfielder player. Generation Adidas, 19 years old. Thoughts on getting him, as I know we were most likely expecting a different player at number two.
Yeah, obviously that player we were targeting was Hamdi Diop, who had started games for us in preseason before when he was previously part of our academy, but then he went to Clemson, we lost his rights, and so on and so forth. Shaq Muhammad is the best of consolation prizes there. He's extremely highly rated by all the pundits. He led as an attacking midfielder slash winger, led Duke in goals this past season. He's only 19 years old. He's definitely got handles on him. He's both footed. He's the type of player that, you know, is at the top of the draft for a reason. And it was incredible to be able to get him and then honestly have him be a backup this season and learn behind guys like Facu Torres and Martino Ojeda, who he could watch their games and try to incorporate their games into his own and hopefully become that similar mold of player, that true, you know, dynamic playmaker at one of the attacking midfield spots. So it's an incredible get to get him, and especially for essentially trading a guy like Juan for him, who, you know, that is almost addition by subtraction in terms of the way we want to play, and we'll talk about that later. Just an incredible move by the front office.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Chase, I know you don't know a lot about the player, but Duncan Maguire, is it the Herman Mack Trophy? Is that what it's called? Or is it just the Herman Trophy?
Mack Herman, I believe.
I believe Mack is the conference.
Oh, okay. Mack Herman Trophy winner.
Is it not? We know college Mack soccer.
Herman. Mack Herman's the dude.
Let me see. We should look this.
Yeah.
Facts and stats. Duncan Maguire, we got him at six.
It's the Mack Herman Trophy. Real quick, it's the Mack Herman Trophy, and it's the Missouri Athletic Conference Trophy. Mack Herman, I don't know. Anyways, there's your knowledge for the day.
Okay. So we have the Mack Herman Trophy winner, yeah. Duncan Maguire, at sixth.
But that is a national award.
Yes.
If that if
no,
that
that's
wasn't
the, that's the highest in college soccer. Yeah. Took us a while to get there.
Yeah, he's the highest in college soccer. And at number six, which is kind of crazy to think about, they obviously didn't announce it until after. But I know you haven't seen a lot of him, but thoughts on taking a striker the year after we took Jack Glenn?
Yeah, I mean, initially my first thought was like, oh, you know, we've done pretty well scouting strikers previously for the, you know, out of the super draft. Mm-hmm. But obviously Jack Glenn hasn't been a hit immediately as soon as he got drafted. You know, he made a few appearances for us, but he never really was that great. He was good for Atlanta City B and MLS Next. I think he actually had a pretty good scoring record there, but he just didn't look up to the pace right now for the MLS. And he's also not quite a spring chicken. You know, isn't Jacqueline like 22 or something? He's a little bit older. And he was a later round pick. But anyways, long story short, I think that we've shown that we do have a good ability to pick a striker. I would say like in the top 5 or 6 picks, you know, DK came fifth. Kyle Larin, even though I know it was a completely different front office, we had success with picking first. So, you know, I'm not going to act like I'm a complete expert on his game. I've just seen clips here and there, but I do have confidence in, Poppy's ability to scout the draft, as well as like Muzi and Marrera and the entire scouting team to scout high rated forwards. And, you know, we can't really expect DK to be the standard that we're going to get out of super draft, particularly forwards. But I think that there's a good shot that he can play, a little bit of a role. He's also pretty physically strong. I believe he's like 6'2". He's got the physical profile of an MLS player already. It just kind of, we'll have to see where he fits in, you know, with Kara as well and the rest of the forward line, and kind of if he can find a spot to be of use. I'm excited to see what he has to do. We obviously think very highly of him, so I'll be interested to see how he performs.
Yeah, we'll definitely do a scouting video on the three first round draft picks, and we'll get into the defender in a second. But I did actually go and watch. There was a playoff or tournament game where Duke played against Creighton. So Shaq Muhammad played against Duncan McGuire. So I got to watch both of them in one game. I highly recommend you guys go check it out. It's just one game. So like, I obviously know everything about the players at this point. You guys don't need to go anywhere else. But in all seriousness, Shaq Muhammad looked okay. He had a couple loose touches, but you can see the potential there. He looks quick. Likes to dribble at people. He likes to, like, when he gets the ball, he engages and will dribble at you. It didn't look like he would just kind of try to kick the ball past you and run. And he was trying to make passes here and there, looked decent. And then Duncan McGuire, out of the two of them, impressed me a little bit more in what I watched. I think he scored in this game as well. He just was very physical. Whenever the ball was in the air, he was getting into duels. He was trying to win the first ball. He was sticking his back into people and just being physical, pressing, decent touches, good movement. Just looked not. He didn't look slow. I wouldn't say he was fast, but he looked like he could keep up. And he just looks ready for the pro game. So I'm not surprised he scored the amount of goals he did in college. And was obviously the Mac Herman Trophy winner. So that's just my quick little bit of analysis on the two. We'll definitely get a scouting video out as they are, you know, top 10 picks in the draft. And those usually are the ones that you hope to see translate into MLS. Well, if not, then, you know, your scouting department has a problem. Adam, anything on Abdi Salim from Syracuse? Any thoughts there on the defender? I haven't seen him play. Don't know much about him.
No, he'll have an opportunity to compete with Thomas Williams for that fourth CB spot. Should be a good competition. What little preliminary research I've done on him, he had some injury issues last season, which yep. could have kept him from showcasing his true potential. So there's a potential for a steal there to be had. Obviously, Rico and co like what they saw from him in the scouting process. So we'll see. Not really much is known about him. I haven't seen any video yet.
Yep. And then the last guy we drafted in the second round, I want to say, Luis Grosso. Already 24 years old, coming out of college. He is a German national, but he's also got United States citizenship. So he will also be fighting for a spot along the back line, Transfermarkt has him as being a center back or a right back. So we will see if he's able to make the roster.
Remember when you thought Nick Taylor was going to make the roster?
Hey, Nick Taylor's a good player. He will turn out good.
I don't see us keeping six center backs.
Well, yeah. But it could be him instead of Salim. You don't know. Doubt it.
Doubt it.
Yeah.
Just from what I know of prospect scouting in general, which I do know a fair bit about that, doing that for the NFL, age is a huge thing in a draft like this. And the older a player is, that just once you pass 22, red flag. Huge red flag. Because then you get into physical development being the reason they were good in college rather than actual skill.
Yeah, that's a good point. Never thought of it that way. Adam dropping knowledge. Chase, okay, let's get out of the draft. Unless you get to start on the big one. Martin Ojeda, DP winger, attacking midfielder, 3+2 contract. Thoughts on the on our biggest signing of the offseason?
Yeah, I think it was a really, really good piece of business. The transfer fee wasn't as high as you might expect for a player who, you know, is presumed to be of great value to this club. You know, he's a bit older than a Facundo Torres, but I think that he's maybe arriving actually at the club at a higher standard than Facundo was, you know, despite Facundo's high standard when he came in. You know, we already see a really clear quality goal contribution ability of Martin Ojeda, his ability to create chances for himself and others, his ability to play, you know, in multiple spots across the front line, even centrally, and be that sort of attacking and an exciting threat. Like, this is kind of the type of player that I really, really enjoy seeing, somebody who has the ability to get on a ball and create something sort of out of nothing. You know, we've all seen a whole lot of clips about this player, and we've obviously been tracking him for so long that we understand how he's going to fit into the system. And I think that who is going to benefit the most from it, honestly, is, well, Erchan Cara or whomever is occupying the 9 spot, because we now have a team that, you know, with Gaston Gonzalez and Facundo and, you know, Martin Ojeda, as well as like some ball progressors in the midfield who can get the ball into those dangerous areas where we can try to look for a, you know, a final pass to the striker, they're going to benefit a lot more and have the service that we, you know, Erchan Cara is definitely the type of player who needs service and to be fed the ball rather than creating for himself. And that's when he's most dangerous. And Martin Ojeda, on top of, you know, being a goal threat himself, is going to unlock a lot of other key opportunities in the play. And, you know, Gavin, excuse me, had like a tweet talking about how we are going to be more built through our attackers in our attack. Essentially, you're saying we were going to have like an attacking attack, which obviously kind of sounds odd at first, but we were so reliant on our fullbacks going forward that I think it's nice now to see that threat coming from forward players who can just kind of, you know, they'll be expected to track back for sure, but they're going to be free to try to create on the attacking end, and then we'll have fullbacks who can kind of provide them coverage and support up front as well. I think that, you know, these attacking, really technical wingers are what's going to kind of strive us into one of the better attacks in the MLS, which is something that we're going to need to have, obviously, competing in like the Champions League and stuff like that. And I think that, you know, him being 24 and we're going to have him for so long, and, you know, I think we only paid around $4 million for him, it looks to be a really, really exciting transfer. And I'm looking forward to seeing him. I know a lot of people already got like, or are planning on at least getting his name on the back of their shirt, and I don't think that's an overreaction. I think he's going to be a very, very successful player here, and I'm excited.
Yeah. So the attack, the more attacking thing, it sounds so simple, right? But like when I was thinking about it, I was just like, what's the easiest way to sum up how we're kind of building this roster this offseason? And it really is that we seem to be focusing our attackers on attacking and our defenders on defending. Not saying that we're not going to have our defenders join the attack, not saying our right back and left back aren't going to be up there at times, But instead of having Benji Michel tracking all the way back, Angulo tracking all the way back, Mauricio Pereira tracking all the way back, Junior Urso playing as the cam, you know, as a defensive cam, basically, we're going to have an attacking attack. And when you look at the names now, Facundo Torres, Mauricio Pereira, Martin Ojeda, Gastón González, and Cara, all being able to be in and around the box, that is a much, much scarier sight for defenses than what we had last season. And then defensively, like, yeah, we traded Juan, and we'll talk about that trade in a little bit. But he was our right back. He was our piece who could really get in behind and unlock a defense. And he was our right back, our right wing back, basically. So it seems now we have a more balanced squad where the attack, the focus will really be to get the ball onto the edge of the final third, which I thought we did really well last season. And then let our attackers do their thing. And then our defense can just focus on defending instead of trying to really help the attack. So there's that. And then with Martin Ojeda, Adam, how do you think we utilize this gem of a player? Because it looks like he can play anywhere along the midfield three, attacking mid, left wing, right wing. We also have Facundo Torres who can play anywhere along the three. We've got Angulo and Gastón González who seem to both be locked on left wingers. So how do you think he fits into the equation of our attack?
Well, I would, as far as starting him, I would leave Gastón Angulo on left wing, and I would play either Facu or Ojeda at cam and the other one on right wing and let them invert. Reason being, both Facu and Ojeda are left-footed, and so you want them to have that ball in their foot to shoot rather than cross. They're still going to create plenty. Ojeda actually had more assists than goals last year, and he was one of the best goal-scoring wingers in, probably the best goal-scoring winger in Argentina. He's just an all-around stud attacker who I think you're spot on when you say he's more polished than Facu was when he arrived here. So to see Facu develop how he has over the course of last season and see a guy who's kind of on his same level currently, even though he just got to the team, he's on the same level that Facu is right now. At least that's what we assume. And so it's going to be, I hope, borderline magical to see those guys just interchange spots and just create havoc for defenses, because that's what they specialize in, is just they have multiple ways to beat you. They're both good passers. They're both good dribblers. They're both fast. They can both shoot. It's a nightmare for defenses. I think the key here, though, when you talk about the more offensive offense, the more defensive defense, is Cesar Araújo, in that he has to do both, because he's going to still drop and play almost that third center back when we're in defense, but he's going to be the one responsible now, because I love this. Matt Doyle puts out a meme from time to time. I'm sure other people too do too. And it's like, it's it's a soccer field. It has, like, in the defensive zone, it's like the defenders play here. They defend. The attackers play here on the other side. They try and score goals. And the midfield, it's just question mark, question mark, question mark. IDK what they do. It's like someone has to get the ball from the defense to the attack, right? And that's going to be Cesar Araújo's job, especially with Mauricio Pereira playing in a more, we hope, free eight role, but still trying to facilitate for the attack. Cesar's going to have to get that ball in good positions for Pereira to be able to spring an attack or help spring them himself, rather than just feed it to the fullbacks like he was trying to do last year, because that is not going to be an option this year.
Yeah, definitely. So either way, Martin Ojeda, he looks like a really, really exciting player for us. And when it comes to Pereira, I think the responsibility falls on him, Adam, to get the ball. Like, obviously, Araújo is going to have to
who's gonna join that responsibility.
Pereira usually picks it up. Yeah.
I say if we hope that he's like playing a more free eight than a true six, or you know, a true double pivot like we might see, then he's going to have to start higher up the field.
Yeah, I could really envision almost a triangle like Araujo, Antonio Carlos, and then Cal Smith at right back. And then the pivot would be Pereira. So it would be one of those three in the triangle, find the extra man in Pereira, who would be, think of him as like the tip of the diamond, and then Pereira turns. So yeah, Araujo definitely has his responsibility. And then the same thing on the left, Araujo as well would be at, part of the triangle with Jansen and Petrasso / Rafael Santos.
And Araujo's still also going to be looking for Ojeda and Fokker.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Gonzalez. The where he's going to have to progress, and he was excellent last year, especially in defense position, is his passing, because those fullbacks aren't going to be the same outlets they were. Rutinho's not there. Juan's not there. Neither of our starting fullbacks are going to be the threat that the previous one was going forward.
Santos might be similar to Moutinho.
Maybe, but we have no idea, and yeah, he hasn't proven himself yet. So we know that, you know, if not Gaston Gonzalez, at least Ivan Angulo can do a job there on left wing. We know Ojeda's going to get touches. We know Faka's going to do his thing. We know Mauricio's going to do his thing, right? There's no reason to run that attack through the fullback. Araujo is going to be looking for different passes this year. And that's why I think he needs to adjust in terms of our style of play.
Yep, I think that's fair. And I think he will adjust. Chase, sticking with Ojeda, what is I don't want to say acceptable. What's a strong return that you're kind of expecting to see? Like, what's your prediction for him in terms of attacking output this season? Thinking he's coming into a more settled attack, it feels like, than the one we had last year. Obviously, Kara and Faku's second season with the club now. Pereira's been around forever. Araujo's been around for a season. So just offensively, it feels like we're going to be a little bit more settled, a little bit less in a transition phase. And he's coming in to kind of bolster that attack and be kind of that extra man. Do you foresee him having a strong year? Do you foresee him struggling a bit? What do you think with Ojeda's first season at the club? What is your prediction there?
I think generally speaking, kind of looking at our previous year, we had obviously another winger come in who was a DP. Like Facundo had a really, really good year, particularly at the back end by all accounts. I think he had like 9 goals in the MLS and like 3 or something in the Open Cup or whatever. And like he was doing very well, setting up his teammates, garnering assists as well. And I don't think there was ever a time where Facundo was particularly struggling, but I think it took him a little bit longer to kind of grow into the player that he became towards the end of the season, which towards the end of the season, he was genuinely playing at a level that is comparable, I think, to almost any other winger in the league. And what I'm honestly hoping and to an extent expecting from Ojeda, because, you know, we say like he is a bit more of a polished player, I'm hoping that Ojeda is able to come in after a preseason and already begin to operate at that level where he should genuinely be one of the better wide players in the league. He should be able to create for others and kind of match the assist numbers from Facundo and, you know, create for himself and score goals and find the final pass and final ball and that touch of class, I guess, and a finish. And I'm hoping that we see that consistently. You know, it's not good to set the expectations too high, but obviously we're bringing in a player that we have scouted for some time. And, you know, we're very sure that he is the type of player that we want to bring in. And we spent, you know, not honestly as much obviously as Facundo, but we still spent like a decent fee on him. We're expecting him to come in and play at a high level like we have seen with Facundo towards the end of this previous season. So I think if I were to have to give numbers, I honestly would hope for like double figures for both goals and assists in the league, like 10 goals, 10 assists, something in that kind of range. And I think that he's going to, you know, you kind of think who Facundo was playing with in the front three. They're not exactly players who maybe operate on the same level of him in terms of like link up play and these kind of quick interlinking passes. You know, thinking of somebody like Benji, who I'm sure we'll talk about later, who, you know, was a very valuable player, but perhaps in the build-up play, he wasn't as reliable, I guess, as somebody like a Gaston Gonzalez or a Facundo or like a Martin Ojeda, rather. Martin Ojeda, excuse me. There's going to be a lot more options for him to play with and a lot more of a polished attack. And I think that we are going to have to see some genuinely elite numbers from him. Not we're going to have to, but I think that there's a good chance that we're going to see some genuinely elite numbers from him because of, you know, the supporting cast that we have now, because of the way that our attack is coming together. So I think that he's going to be coming in and operating at a very high level. And the one thing that I really, really want to see, particularly because we're competing on multiple fronts and we have a standard that we now want to uphold, we want to be challenging for trophies and stuff, I want to see him come in and immediately showcase the level that he has been showing in Argentina for the past few years, not take too long to kind of grow into the player that we are expecting him to be. And I think that there's a good chance that he will, because all signs point to what is already an extremely talented player who has still some room to grow.
Well said. I agree. I'm thinking like at least over 9 goals, like 9 or 10 I'd be happy with, and then probably, yeah, the same for assists. Like a 9-9 season would be just about pretty good. I would hope that maybe Facundo Torres also has like a 10-12 or a 12-10 season or something like that. And this is just for MLS. I'm sure there'll be more with all competitions, especially with all the games that we're going to play. But yeah, like a 9-9 and above is where I'm feeling. Adam, what say you on expectations for Martin Ojeda's first season?
Well, he had 27 goal contributions last year, 13 goals, 14 assists. I'd like to see him hit 20. I think if he's doing that, Facu continues on the pace that he was towards the second half of last season, we're getting a home playoff game at the very least. That's what I'd like to see. What will we see? I think that's a reasonable expectation for him, honestly. Given that he's a little older, I think he's 24. He's not like just this kid coming in. He's been a top 5 player in the Argentinian league, which is a good and competitive league. It's, you know, either the best or second best league in South America, depending on how you view the Brazilian league. Of course, there's always the possibility that he could be not as good as we expect. Look what happened with Pini Martinez, right? The best player from same league comes in and complete bust. Obviously, there's nothing ever guaranteed. It just, the fit looks so good. We've seen a very similar player to him and Facu have pretty immediate success. I mean, it took Facu a little bit, but he's also 3 years younger. It all looks like it should come together pretty quick, is what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, that's it for Martin Ojeda. Really can't wait to see his first touches in purple. It's going to be really exciting to see how he does. Let's go ahead and move on to the last kind of signing at the moment. That is Rafael Santos, left-backed from parent club, Cruzeiro. They have loaned him out a couple times. Cruzeiro were actually in the second division in Brazil, but he was loaned up to the first division of Brazil, Serie A, Coritiba, I think it was. And I'm working on getting some footage of him as well for a scouting video. 2-year contract plus 2, 4 years, 24 years old. Looks to be pretty decent at crossing the ball. Looks to be pretty technical left back. Haven't really been able to see too much of him defensively in terms of clips. Most of the clips I've seen on YouTube are him swinging in good crosses and picking out an attacker. So I want to see some more defensive work before I make a total judgment call on this. But Adam, we'll stick with you. Thoughts on Santos being brought in?
It's a good deal because his deal was actually originally supposed to be a loan, which means that he's pretty decently thought of on the Brazilian side of things, at least by that parent club, that they would want him back or thought he could be more valuable in the future. You know, it's a good bit of business getting that permanent transfer, I assume, with some kind of sell-on. Otherwise, there's no way they would have done it. Always good to have competition at that left-back spot. That's, a definite question mark with João Moutinho leaving. I have a question that I guess I'll pose to either of you about that left back spot. If we look at the responsibilities of the spot, it's, you know, get back and defend, and then going forward, it's basically stay vertical, stay wide, and put a cross in. Do we think that with the absolutely zero playing time Jake Mulroney is going to get at either wing spot, but especially left wing, do you think it might behoove him to switch positions to left back and just enter that competition, given that there's, you know, two other unknowns in a genuine competition for that job?
Chase, I'll let you take that one first.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting shout. I don't think Mulroney's ever exactly lit up, Orlando City anytime he stepped on the field. The only thing that suggests that maybe he will get some chances on the wings is just because we are going to be playing a lot of games this year, and he's, you know, an interesting depth he's just a player who can kind of come in and rotate, and we do some squad rotation. Interesting depth option. That's where I was going with that. But
I have Mulroney sixth on the winger depth chart.
Yeah. Well, who do you have ahead of him?
Shaq Mohammed, because he has to be better. Yeah. Also, good. Like, you have Facu, Ojeda, Gaston, Angulo, and let's say Shaq Mohammed is something and goes ahead of Mulroney, right? Then you also have the option of only playing two wingers instead of three, like we're normally going to do if you just move Pereira to the 10 and play Cartagena or Martins at the other midfield spot, both of whom I'd rather see in a lineup than Jake Mulroney. So we could potentially, in like midweek times, you know, go with a more true 4-2-3-1, or I guess a more true 4-3-3 or whatever, and play more midfielders rather than go with that extra winger instead of playing Mulroney.
Don't forget, we did play Mulroney on the right a couple times last season.
Oh, that went so well.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
You think he's bad on the left? Watch when you tell me he can't cross.
I don't.
He has to invert instead.
I don't want to see him at left back. Defensively,
I think that it's interesting though, because like
it is.
Kyle Smith is obviously going to be more of the two fullbacks, probably the one who stays back more. Sometimes it almost looks like we kind of like will at least start in a defensive three once we lose possession until the other kind of fullback comes in, like they kind of tuck in a little bit. And if that's the case with Kyle Smith like staying back and there's going to be some space, Jake Mulroney, if nothing, has raw pace and not a killer delivery, but not a horrible one. So
has a better delivery than most left backs.
Yeah, I mean, there were some times I can never pick out like exact instances, but I think like kind of his first few appearances, I thought that he looked okay. Like he was getting on the ball and trying to beat a man, and then he had a few good deliveries in. And defensively, there is like a question. I mean, he does track back from time to time, but it's nothing spectacular. But I mean, that left back position, really, it almost is kind of feeling like defensive responsibility is going to be at a standard, I guess, where maybe perhaps in training it could be taught. And you know, we see a lot of wingers kind of move back into fullback, but I don't know. It's not something that I foresee happening, but if we're talking like business career decisions for Jake Mulroney, being an MLS winger, particularly one now where you have two elite level designated players occupying spots where you would like to be playing, it might make sense for him to try to kind of move around to find a spot in the team. So, it's not impossible that he could occupy it, but I don't know. Don't foresee
it. Yeah. So Adam, his best chance of playing time is definitely left back, but he's still third on that depth chart as well. Right. So it's Santos and Petrasso and then Mulroney. Because honestly, Petrasso was a left winger when he broke through at Toronto. He was more in the attack than in the defense. And then throughout the season, he slowly kind of moved backwards as like a wing back, as Bob Bradley started to chop and change formation to try and figure something out in Toronto, which he eventually never did come to a solution that worked. Petrasso started attacking wise, and then he kind of came back to a more attacking left back. And it seems like that's the route we're going this season. So we're kind of shifting the attacking fullback instead of Juan. We're moving it over to the left with the additions, right? It sounds like Santos is a more attacking fullback. Petrasso is definitely a more attacking left fullback. That seems to be where we're focusing our attack this offseason in terms of the two fullback positions. So for me, Jake Mulroney would be third on the depth chart there as well. I feel bad for the guy. He moved to us from Atlanta for playing time when we were down bad on wingers and he still didn't really get playing time. I wouldn't be surprised to see him traded for
some simple game. I think we should, but I don't know who's going to trade for him.
There's a spot. There's a spot in the league that would take him. Somebody would. He's good depth.
San Jose. He's depth.
I wouldn't mind keeping him either. Right? Like,
I don't want to see him on the field. If we have an injury crisis that bad, we're playing winger number six. We're already done.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
There has to be counting kids who are worth taking a punt too.
Yeah. Like a Rivera or a Tablante or something. Chase, any thoughts on Rafael Santos? Have you looked into any videos of him or any thoughts on that left back?
I mean, just the limited stuff. He does seem to have a good delivery, which, you know, like I said, I think the left back is going to be the one who gets up a little bit higher in terms of the two fullbacks. So that's something interesting. He's supposedly a good set piece taker, but you know, I think we already have some good left-footed set piece takers. I'm interested to see how Ojeda does it that, but it doesn't seem like it's something that we're definitely going to have to see a little bit more because there's limited information on him right now. So yeah, nothing too crazy.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is it for the signings. Let's go ahead and get Chase, your thoughts on the summary of exit. So again, these are the ones that Daniel and I covered last episode. So we lost Giacchini. So this is going to be like a walk down memory lane at this point. It's been so long. Giacchini in the expansion draft. Andres Pereira traded to Philly. Urso and club mutually agreed to part ways. Joao Moutinho on a free. Teshua Kandele ended up retiring. We thought he was going to Charlotte. Joey Desart gone, Alexander Alvarado gone, Pato gone. I think I just named 8 or 9 players. Thoughts on the mass exodus of players leaving our club?
I don't know. I mean, I think I like a lot of the guys who left, or at least a fair amount of them. I mean, I love Benji Michel, obviously. I'm sad to see him go, but I think that is, you know, a good enough career move. Like if he wants to go try his luck, I think that it always kind of seemed like he had aspirations to play elsewhere. You know, I know he'd like trained in Brazil, not that that was really like a thing to get a new player in, but just kind of like a good experience. He seems like the type of guy who, if he had the opportunity to go play abroad, he would like to do it. And, you know, I'm happy for him there. It looks like we've got some solid depth and attack, but you know, I'm definitely gonna miss him. He's genuinely a club legend in some ways. Andreas Pereira, like, he had a rough season. He never really panned out. You know, Junior Urso, I'm a bit sad to see him go, but he's aging. And as much as he was solid last season, there were signs that maybe it would have been a good time to move on. Cause I think it's better to move on from a player when they're still operating at a fine level than to wait too long and, you know, have to kind of struggle.
That's
to
a really good principle.
Yeah. And, you know, Tesho is Tesho Akindele. He's, you know, we're not going to miss too much, I think. And even Juan, in a sense, I think that we had an issue of being a little over-reliant on him, even when he was kind of showing that maybe he could not occupy the role that we were wanting him to anymore. You know, he has like obviously great pace and he can get into the areas where he can try and put in a ball consistently even, but it's just, you know, that final pass has always eluded him. And, you know, I almost think that he can be addition by subtraction to an extent. And I know that that sounds a little bit harsh, but I think that maybe it was just time for him to move on, particularly, you know, moving up in the draft. I'm fine with that. I think that that is about fair value when you think of like what we got out of him for a few years and then we moved him on for a good young player. I think that's completely fine business. You know, some guys that I'll miss, like I think actually kind of for like sentimental purposes, it's like you think of like the MLS's back, like COVID era team. It was great watching him. It was a great time. And it definitely is starting to feel like, you know, we're moving into a new sort of generation, I guess, at Orlando City. And thankfully, it seems to be a very positive direction that we're moving into. But from sort of like a sentimental perspective, I'm sad to see a lot of the guys go. But from a purely on-field business standpoint, it seems like a lot of these exits were at the right time and things that are not really going to hurt us too bad, I feel. Nothing to cry about.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good way to summarize it. I did technically not ask about Benji or Juan, as we were going to have separate conversations about them, but you went into both, so I appreciate it. You're really efficient this tonight. I love it.
That's our class tomorrow, you know. I'm trying to
trying to speed this up, I know. Adam, so let's start with the Juan trade, as you and I, we've had our battles when it comes to Juan versus Smith, and our really in-depth discussions in general. And now that that problem is no more, Juan traded essentially for Shaq Mohammed. Ideally, they were looking for Hamadi Diop. Thoughts on just Juan leaving the club in general? It kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I think it's surprising because I was of the opinion, based on just people that I'd talked to and watching how this club operates for the past few years, that they were just going to try to run it back a little bit and make some key additions, which is not what they're doing. even they said as much, even though they end up, you know, all these very familiar players to us end up leaving, Juan, Urso, Benji, Tasha, right? But I was pleasantly surprised that they were willing to self-evaluate enough to make the move that needed to be made. Juan himself, not a bad player. Not an unuseful player, right? If he's your starting fullback in MLS, you're still fine. You can't run your attack through him, which you are so tempted to do because of his like absolute world-class speed, his best attribute by far. You're so tempted to, you know, every other attack that goes up the right side, just kind of put a ball in front of him and have him run onto it, right? But you can't do that. That's not how good offenses work in soccer. You don't run them through the right back. And because of his track record here and just the temptation to continue doing that, I think they knew they needed to, the front office knew they needed to move on to from him in order to fix some of our attacking problems from last year and kind of turn over a new leaf. So that's where the addition from subtraction comes in. Not that we hate Juan the player. Not that we think he's a bad player, just it needed to happen for Orlando City to move, to get better on offense. It's also a brilliant move vis-a-vis the salary cap. If you so the third overall pick was also traded, actually, for I think 450K GAM. So let's say no 400K GAM. So let's say the second overall pick is then worth 450, right? So we essentially, if in GAM value, traded Juan for 450K GAM, plus we cleared up his contract, which I think was around 300K, and MLS pays Generation Adidas contracts. They do not count against salary cap. So Shaq Mohammed's contract is completely free. So that's another 300K in cap space on top of that. So we essentially traded Juan for about $700K to $750K in GAAP. I'm being
told that is really good math.
Was 360K is the information getting to me. So yeah, 700K to 800K in GAM is essentially what we got for Juan, which is fantastic return for that level player. So it's just really good business. It's getting in an exciting prospect that could really, really help us a year or two down the road. It's a win for all. Juan still gets to go play in a he'll start for DC. It's not like we're, you know, sending him to bumfuck nowhere. Right. So I think it's a win for all parties involved, honestly.
I think so too. And sometimes you have to lose a player to advance forward. Like, I felt like we needed to lose Nani to.
Yeah, Nani's a perfect example.
Yeah. Like, good player, but he limits the squad. He limits the play style in a way. No hard feelings. Did great things for us. We got a little bit better. Maybe not in the standings, but we went and won a trophy. Now this year we're losing Juan. We're going to have to change up our play style a bit. We're forced to change up our play style a bit. And we will see where that takes us. We bring in Martin Ojeda. Really, really excited. Chase, I know you already kind of touched on Benji. Any other additional things you wanted to touch on with Benji or Juan before we move on?
No, I think honestly, Adam, bro, that was a baller like explanation you gave about Juan. That was sick. Especially once you put it that way, it sounds like a great piece of business. But yeah, Benji is the one that I am very sad about. He has some of the greatest moments that this club has had in the MLS, or at least in the MLS era. My girlfriend's even sadder. She's got his name in the back of her shirt. So, you know,
yeah.
It's going to be tough, but good for him.
I posed the question, legend or no legend, on Twitter. I know we talked about it after the Open Cup. But Chase, to give you your credit, you didn't call him a legend, but you called him a club icon.
Yeah.
And I really liked that wording.
I think it's very apt. I mean, I think you just think of all the incredible moments that he's had and him kind of being one of the few players that I feel like his first season, we were still kind of down in the dumps and he progressed. You know, there are still limitations and issues with his game, but I think that he progressed nicely as a player as the club progressed towards, you know, the team that it is now. And yeah, it's sad. And he definitely is an icon, but I'm excited to watch him play. I told Adam, which me and Adam are actually coworkers now over at Cappy's, but I told Adam that whenever I watch Daryl DK, I feel like I'm like watching my son or something like that. Like I'm a parent at like a game on the sidelines or something, which I know sounds stupid, but it's just because like there's an affinity for him. And I definitely am going to feel that with Benji Michel. I don't know how exactly I'm going to watch FC Adaoka, but I'm going to have to figure it out because I need to see my star boy shine.
Adam, anything further on Juan or Benji?
Benji is our first homegrown to ever actually do anything.
Yeah.
And I think that's
significant. He did some good stuff for us.
Right? He's by far our best homegrown ever. I think that's very significant that he's not a homegrown as in like moved here when he was 15, got in the academy and was eligible. Benji grew up in Orlando. He's from here, and you know, I actually my roommate went to high school with Benji Michel, right? That's special, and maybe he wasn't a legend for his play on the field, although he did have some incredible moments. When we look back at eventually, and Orlando's also a very young club, we have to keep that in mind. When we look back 50 years from now, hopefully, Benji Michel is not, you know, on our pantheon of best players ever. That would be very sad. But in terms of, we don't win the Open Cup without Benji, and that's our first major trophy since becoming an MLS team. In terms of him being the first Orlando kid to become an Orlando City player and actually meaningfully contribute on the pitch, he's someone that I think will hold a more special place in the hearts of those who watched him and those who are fans that at the time that he was with the club, more than people will appreciate him that come on in the future. That, you know, kids that are being born now that will like really come into their understanding of the club in the next like 10, 15 years, they won't know what Benji meant to us.
Yeah, they won't have that connection. I see what you're saying.
But for us right now, who did watch everything, and the way he played, and the way that he seemed to genuinely enjoy representing Orlando, and I think that's special to those who he did it for, which is us that are here right now. So maybe club legend in 50 years? No, probably not. Special to everyone that got to watch him? Absolutely.
Yeah, that's why I like the wording that Chase used, club icon. I think as soon as I read it, I was like, that's the one. Benji's a club icon. So echo everything you guys both said. Really sad to see him gone. But players have to leave eventually. And I'm really happy that he got to move on to greener pastures, broader pastures across the pond sort of thing. All right, let's get into our questions and get out of here. Thank you to those of you who asked questions over on Twitter. I put up a post this morning saying drop your questions for us in the comments. I think we've got 6 on here. We'll try to keep them tight, try to keep them quick. First one is NJ Tommy at Tommy CTID. Chase, we'll start with you. Prediction for the Champions League run.
Sorry, I was muted, but I think that it really all hinges on the first round genuinely against Tigres. Like, I think it's important really not to set our sights personally farther beyond them right now, because they're an extremely formidable opposition, especially having to go to Mexico for one leg. It's always just an environment that MLS teams find it hard to play in, because like the passion of the fan base and the standard of play in Mexico is still, you know, MLS is getting there, but it's a very high standard of play, and Tigres are a historically very successful team. But if we are able to get out of there, and, you know, we definitely have the squad to do it, I think the first home game against Tigres for us is going to be really, really important. We need to kind of like set a standard. Or, yeah, we open at home against them, right? It's home, then away for us.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I think that first game is going to be really, really important. But I mean, you know, we've seen MLS teams find success in the Champions League recently. I think that if we are to get past this first round, I think that there is some really, really interesting possibilities, because there always tends to be some upsets where you'll have the opportunity to play a team, you know, like an Olympia or something like that in the quarters. And they're also nothing to sneeze at, but there's a lot that can happen once you get past this first round, because we were, you know, lined up against a really solid opposition.
Sorry, we go to Mexico first.
Okay. Well, I guess that kind of makes that a bit of a moot point, but I mean, it even still kind of applies. Like, we have to make sure that we're able to still be in that game in the return leg. And then we have to make sure we put ourselves in a good position, I guess, in Mexico. But the Champions League is obviously a foreign thing to us, but we have players who have played at, you know, really high levels, won trophies in other countries and stuff like that, and you know, we have the squad, and it's particularly, I think, our center back pairing is actually going to be able to stand up to the challenge, because I think often where MLS teams struggle in Champions League actually is defensively, and I think that, you know, barring the new addition and, you know, Kyle Smith at right back, who is serviceable for sure, but I think our center back pairing and goalkeeper are going to be able to kind of at least keep us in that game. And then we have the attacking talent, especially now seeing how they'll gel early, but to do well. And Tigres is the important first step, and then once we move on there, it really is at that point, I think it's we could either make a run to the final, or we genuinely could be out in the first round. It's kind of hard to predict this competition, but I will say that there is no need to be so negative, I guess, about our chances in this competition. As I've seen, you know, some people be, I think that we have the opportunity to do something pretty cool here. I mean, I'm not saying that we're going to win it, but I think a good cup run is always a great time, as we saw last year in the domestic cup. And I want us to take it seriously. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think some teams in the MLS will kind of treat it as a secondary competition, which is odd because it is the Champions League, but I want us to be, you know, as all in as we possibly can with, you know, still focusing on MLS as well and rotating properly. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be enjoyable. And I think that we can do well.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see our club on the biggest stage that we could possibly be on. Or I guess the second biggest, we can't be in the Club World Cup yet. But yeah, really, really excited to see us in CCL. My prediction, I think we lose, but I would absolutely love to see us go through. I agree we should take this competition seriously. Why not? You know, I know it wrecks MLS seasons sometimes, but I think we have the squad to cope with it. Adam, what do you think of prediction for CCL?
Jigris getting home field first is a big advantage.
Really?
I think so.
I feel like home advantage, I feel like going away second is harder than going away first.
I would disagree, and here's why. You want to come out and get advantage after the first leg, so then you know what type of game you have to play in the second leg. And obviously you want to be up, right? So I feel like I would rather be home first and be up going in the second leg and knowing exactly like how many I can concede, you know, what the goal differential has to be. Do I need to win this, right? I would rather come out swinging in the first. And especially because, you know, we've never gone international like this before. Obviously, we've gone to Canada, but and that really hasn't worked out for well for us too much. yeah, I think it's been very tough, and I think this is actually a good thing that we drew Tigres first, because if you ain't first, you're last, right? There's no, you know, no one's gonna care if we come in second in CCL or third or fourth in CCL. We might as well take the toughest opponent first. If they knock us out, then we can just focus on MLS. If we get past them, they're like, okay, well, we can mess around and win this thing. So I was like when we drew Tigres, like, oh, of course, come on, right? But then like when you think about it, it's kind of a blessing in disguise. But no, I think Tigres is probably going to win. But that's not to say we can't. Where there's definitely the talent in the squad. I just think I would feel more confident if we could say maybe get a 1-0 victory or like a 2-1 victory over them in Orlando and go into Monterrey only having to say get a draw, which, you know, we can shit house a draw.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, my first reaction was definitely I'm glad we got them first, because basically what you said, I don't want to go 3 rounds deep and then get knocked out, and then our MLS season is real rough. If we're going to get knocked out, I'd rather get knocked out first round, and I think Tigres are the most likely opponent in the entire competition to knock us out. So we will see what happens. Tesho Time at Forever Our City. Chase, coming to you first. Our academy seems on the verge of taking that next step. Of current first team, former academy players, Fabian Loyola, Rivera, Halliday, Freeman, Williams, Saj Dahar, who will be the first to go abroad out of that group? Who will end up being the most expensive transfer abroad?
Ooh.
So Loyola, Rivera, Halliday, Freeman, Williams, Saj Dahar.
I mean, the answer isn't in that tweet. It's Benji.
Well, yeah, he's the first to go abroad.
Yeah.
But I guess of that group. Benji was kind of the old regime academy, though.
Yeah, so is Stadahar.
Stadahar was a bit. I honestly kind of think Stadahar is obviously, I think he's an MLS life kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Or at least U.S. soccer life kind of guy. I like, obviously, what I've seen out of Fabian Loyola. We are well documented. Well, at least I am, that I'm not the largest, like, Orlando City B watcher. But Alex Freeman, I've seen some really good stuff from him with the youth national teams and stuff like that. And he's honestly extremely highly touted. And I think he previously had like minor European interests. So I think that's always a good sign for a young player. But I think that my answer is, I think there's a good chance that either of our young right backs can make the move if they would like, because I think with Kyle Smith, who is very dependable, even though I think a little bit last season he started to show some cracks here and there, because, you know, the scouting report on him is always that he's so, you know, has he's just Kyle Smith. He does what he does, and he's very fine at it, I guess. I think that the opportunity is there for either of them. You know, they're 18 and 19 to kind of take up that first choice spot. And Mikey Halliday, I think at times looked pretty good. And if either of them are able to take over that first fullback spot, you know, we've seen players like Joe Scally, who really didn't even play that much in the MLS, get a move and then do very well abroad. I think that the answer is probably one of those two right backs. And if I had to pick one of the two, I think I might go Alex Freeman. But they both have the opportunity here this season to get some good playing time and show what they got and try to get that move abroad.
Adam, out of that group, who do you think goes abroad? Who's the first to go abroad, if any of them? And who do you think will be most expensive? Probably the same player.
I don't know if any of them will be that expensive.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to get too much money for any of them.
They really have to explode it.
If someone were going to be expensive, it would be Loyola, I think, I think he's probably the one that's most hyped about by like U.S. youth sickos that actually pay attention to that shit.
Yeah.
She's like, hey, not me.
Not anymore. Thank God.
But Loyola's got to break ahead. He's got to beat out Shaq Muhammad for, like, you know, that youngster that gets playing time spot and the attacking midfield. And then he's got to actually do something with that playing time before we can even think about, you know, him getting, you know, being the best and then getting sold and going abroad. I think more realistically, Chase is right that it's going to be one of the fullbacks just because the opportunity's there. But no, I don't think anyone will be that expensive.
Yeah. Loyola interests me because he kind of came out of nowhere. Like he rose. That's the word. I was going to say like Riz, but like, no, he rose up really quickly.
Got that Riz.
Yeah.
Talking about pride players.
It's hilarious. No, he rose up really quickly, just like September timeframe, like Fabian Loyola, doing youth national team stuff. Oh, he's getting promoted to MLS Next Pro. Oh, he was in the MLS Next All-Star game and he won the MVP in that game. Like, you start seeing all these things, Loyola here, Loyola here. And when that starts to happen, it's like, when you hear someone's name, it's like, they're coming. Like, they're breaking through. Something is happening there. And so then the next thing where his name has popped up is he's on the team. So, like, the scouts are seeing something. You don't move from MLS Next to MLS Next Pro to the team that quickly unless you're breaking through. So something positive is happening there. If he were to break out this season, definitely you could see an expensive transfer to go abroad. I'm going to say him with a backup option of Freeman because he's 18. And if he were to break through, European scouts tend to be all over American right backs. There are a lot of American right backs over in Europe right now. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him added to the list of people moving over there.
I'm surprised no one said Thomas Williams because obviously he was really hyped after his debut. And I know he had a few shaky performances, but I think he's shown a lot and he's, you know, 6'4", all right with the ball at his feet. He's young international. I think that he could be someone as well to look at.
He could. The path to playing time for him is really tough because right. He has to, I mean, two center backs ahead of him have to get injured before he gets on the field. And he hasn't shown anything on the field up until this point where anyone's calling about him for a move.
I think we should loan him to USL, to be honest. I think we should loan him to a team that says we will play him. I don't know which USL team would play
if we do that. Center back. If we do that, we have to sign, you know, an MLS veteran backup center back.
Yeah.
Because we can't go into the season with just three center backs.
And they're out there. Again. There's free agents we could do
yeah.
for a one-year deal. But yeah.
Shane O'Neill, come on down.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay. At Mike A. Spillane, I view the Ojeda signing as the one that can unlock our offense. similar to a Hani or Driussi, Hani Mukhtar, obviously, or Sebastian Driussi. Do you think he can elevate to that level? Adam, it's a yes or no question. I want to hear a yes or no answer. Do you think Ojeda can elevate to a Hani Driussi level?
Is that trademark? I guess they don't work for ESPN anymore. See or no? See.
Ooh, okay. Chase?
I think so. Well, either that or he unlocks Faku to the point where Faku is that player.
Ooh, I like that as well. I think, you know, the answer that we had was a little more realistic, but if all goes well, Martin Ojeda very, very much could be that Driussi or Hani Mukhtar type player. So I'm going to say yeah as well.
I'm going to be the bearer of bad news. I'm going to be the negative Nancy, I guess. Boo. Look, he looks good, obviously. Really excited to see him. Those guys went insane last season. Hani Mukhtar's been MVP caliber for two seasons in a row. Is it even possible for Oscar Pereja to coach an attacker to that level?
I mean, that's the level Faku was playing on the second half of the season.
Right, but he didn't have that output. Right.
Did he score in like five straight games or something?
Yeah, but I mean, Hani finished with like 29 goals and like 20 assists or something crazy like that. But he was like Nashville's entire offense, and he has been. But look, do I hope? Yes, obviously. Duh. Do I think? I don't think that will happen. Maybe next season. So, you know, the whole two season thing. But yeah, I
wasn't saying necessarily next year, but Ojeda can be the guy that propels our offense and unlocks it in a similar way, I think, is what Mike was saying.
No, he was asking, can he elevate to the level of Hani or Driussi?
I hope so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he can.
That would be amazing.
He absolutely can. He is that talented. Again, he was a top five player in the Argentinian league.
I think that he's coming in at a higher...
Will he is a bigger question. Will he? Probably not in the first year. Can he? Absolutely.
He's coming in at a higher profile, I feel like, than Hani was when he came into the league. Hani was a bit of a journeyman before who was good. I mean, but
Martin Ojeda had 27 gold contributions last year. Let's say he replicates that in MLS. He's an MVP candidate.
That's MVP level, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. Maybe I'm just the negative Nancy. Maybe I'll change my mind after our scouting video.
And those are real assists, not MLS assists.
Right. Yeah. MLS assists. Ugh.
So okay. If he had that same season in MLS, that's more like 35 goal contributions, if we're being honest.
This one's an interesting question here. Adam, I'm going to go to you. What do we know? This is from at MTBH12. What do we know about Robin Jansen and his status on his recovery from surgery? Everybody has him starting, but is that true?
I don't see why not. I haven't heard. I'm pretty well connected. I haven't heard anything differently. You mentioned it, like
October or November.
What did he get operated on?
I think his knee.
What is that? Surgery. It's always good when we're doing research while recording. You know that this is a foot surgery.
October 8th.
Stress factor.
Yeah.
Oh, he's going to be fine. Yeah.
That's why we haven't heard anything about it, because he's going to be fine.
Jansen's recovery timeline was described as 12 to 15 weeks. Now is the start of October.
He's better by now. He'll be fully ready to go in training camp.
Also, by the way, Jansen has... Adam, you are moving your mic so much. Sorry. Jansen has an option in 2023 and 2024. So next 2 years are option years for Jansen, just as an FYI for everyone. All right. Chase, or we'll get this one out of the way because it's along similar lines, from IrisMelissa75. Chase, have you heard any updates on Gaston's progress from injury recovery?
Unfortunately, I'm not as connected as Adam is, so I know everything that anyone else who has a Twitter account knows. But I mean, I think that when we heard his initial timeline from when he first got injured, it was putting him to be ready about at the beginning of this season. So fingers crossed that that is the occurrence right now.
He should be joining. He should be joining training at the start of preseason. Because wasn't he training? Wasn't he back on the field already, like near the end of playoffs or something like that?
What do you mean on the field? Like he was on the sidelines and stuff. Was he?
I thought training? I saw like he was like running around a little bit, not like full-blown training. I mean, he injured it in May. So
his injury was the beginning of May, and it was an ACL tear, and an ACL tear is 8 to 9 months. So he'll be ready for the start of the season.
Is it even 8 to 9 months anymore?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it is. Yes.
It's 8 to 9 months for you to get back out there playing, and then you got to rebuild your strength.
You can be working out after like 6 months, but
yeah,
8 to 9 months is full speed.
Well. All right, last one here. Chase, I'll stick with you on it. At Florida_man76, how do you rate our scouting network?
How do I rate? I think that it has been the biggest key, honestly, to our success. Because I think that something that they've done really well, on top of finding extremely talented players, is ensuring the players that they bring in are going to contribute to what seems to be a very positive kind of locker room and club culture that we have going right now. So I think to a man, they've improved our squad. And I think that they've also done extremely well to bring in players who can buy into, you know, what we're trying to do and the sort of like project that has been occurring, this sort of steady kind of upward trajectory that we've been on these past few years. And I think that a lot of, if not almost all of the success is because of the scouting that we've done for international players. I mean, you know, you can say what you want about Cara, for example, but even he still had like 11 goals last year, which I still think is pretty successful. And I think that they've been really successful in every player that this kind of new regime, if you will, has brought in. And even more so with making sure that they are going to be a good fit personally here as well. And I think that's something that could be a little bit underappreciated now in this very data-driven, which data is incredibly valuable, but in this very data-driven time that we live in for this sport, it also is, you know, it's Jimmy and Joe's as well as X's and O's. And I think that we do really well on both fronts. And the scouting department has been really, really great. That there's a reason why, you know, Ricardo is being looked at for general managers. Positions at other teams in the league, and you know, club teams in Brazil are trying to bring him in sort of a technical backroom staff realm, I guess, as well. It's because they are very good at their job and they've been really successful and done well.
Yeah. I think scouting is a outcome-based thing sometimes, right? So if you get your player right, you got a good scouting network. You get the player wrong, you have a bad scouting network. But there's just so much scouting that goes on all the time. So like, it's kind of hard to rate it without like looking at it long term. We've obviously had hits, we've had misses as well. So I'd say it's above average. And then you think of some of the players that we tried to get but didn't, right? We tried to get Julian Alvarez, who eventually went on to Man City and eventually went on to win the World Cup. Who was the other big name player that we tried to sign that we didn't get?
Darwin Nunez,
that's right. Maybe we got a little bit lucky with that one. No, I'm kidding.
I thought Bruno Guimaraes as well.
Did we scout him as well?
I thought I heard something like, I saw like Ricardo or something allude to that on Twitter.
Yeah. Or we looked at the Maldonado guy, who I think is either in the Premier League or he's over in Europe somewhere. It's like a center defensive mid center back.
I think also Di Arrascaeta, the Uruguayan. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name. He had a really good World Cup. He's like the best player in South America.
Yeah, we've definitely scouted a ton of these players who have gone on to be successful. And when you hear that, that is why I lean to the above average side of things. We're locating the talent. We might not have the money or the pull to get it, but we're certainly trying. Facundo Torres is certainly a hit. I think Martin Ojeda at the price is certainly a hit, unless he just absolutely is a dumpster fire failure, but I don't think so. So I'm happy with our scouting department. I think Luis Muzzi and Ricardo Moreira have done a fantastic job. Adam, would you add anything to those words?
Yeah, if you follow him on social media, Muzzi doesn't post anything, Rico does. You'll notice he goes to like a lot of conferences and that involve like different executives around the world, not just MLS. And he and his network that he's set up is very well respected in world soccer, on par with big name European technical directors and scouting heads and all that. Like Chase said, there's a reason that other teams are trying to poach him away from us. I think that says a lot about the work that he's done and the work that Muzzi's done in teaching. Basically, Muzzi's the one who's good at MLS, and Rico's the one that's good at finding players, and they work very well together. And I would say that makes a very effective front office.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really good dichotomy. All right, so that just about does it for the episode. Do you guys have anything else you want to add? All right, we will leave it there. Awesome.
We're getting back in the swing of things.
Yes, we are. January 8th, a couple more months, and then we are ready to roll. Chase, where can our amazing listeners find you at?
You can find me on Twitter at VamosOCSC.
Sir. And Adam, where can our amazing listeners find you at?
You can find me at Kosher Taco Truck on Twitter and at Cappy's Food Truck on Twitter and Instagram. An announcement on that for the food truck, we were at Broken Strings Brewery a lot last season. We unfortunately will not be able to do that as much this season due to a deal that they struck with a different food vendor. But that food vendor is unable to make it for the opening game. So we will be able to do that.
Yes!
And be there for all your Cappy's pregame needs. So very exciting.
Can't it's wait. February That's 25th, awesome.
I believe.
Stinks about the other food vendor, but really happy to hear that you'll be there for the first game. You know, exactly.
So we'll still probably do a few.
Yeah.
I hope.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you guys so much. Really appreciate having you on. Your words of wisdom, both of you. Have a good rest of your night. And as always, Vamos Orlando.
Vamos. And for the last time.
Yo.
It's not Tesher time anymore.
Why you got to bring the mood down, Adam?
It's always Tesho time.
May you enjoy your retirement, Tesho, if you are listening to this.
This one's to you, Tesho.
Why would he?
I don't know. He's listening to development podcast.
Right.
That man is learning cryptocurrency as we speak.
Oh right, my exactly. God.
Awesome. Well, yeah, have a good rest of your night, guys.
All right. Later.
Scores! DK wins it for Hernandez!